So before we really get into the details of our project, I just wanted to give you, for folks who are not so familiar with the Laboratory Response Network, just give you a bit of an overview. It's an integrated network of state and local public health, federal and military, food and international laboratories. They're fully equipped to respond quickly to acts of chemical and biological terrorism and other public health threats through timely notification and rapid data exchange to support public health actions. And our role in supporting this as a LIMS integration, this project is a CDC initiative to support standardized automated data flow between CDC and participating LRN laboratories. And this is about as many words as we could put on as a definition before we thought folks' eyes would glaze over. So we did attempt a bit of a visual depiction of the LRN process when it's most critical. And this is in the event of a deliberate release of a chemical or biological agent. And in such an event, a massive effort is undertaken not only to treat patients but to collect volumes of samples that are then processed and analyzed at partnering LRN facilities, most of those facilities being public health laboratories. I'm going to pause here for a second to quantify some of that statement. Massive undertaking. What else did I say? Volumes of samples. And the only real case study we have to point to this point is, and we're fortunate of this, but we have one case study, and that is the 2001 anthrax event. That happened nearly 10 years ago. In that event, in a three-month span, over 1 million samples were collected and processed. About less than 5,000 actual people were identified to be either having direct or indirect contact with the particular sites of interest, the American Media Building in Florida, the Senate Building, and the various distribution centers, the U.S. Postal Office that actually carried those letters, those contaminated letters. 5,000 people, 23 identified suspected cases of anthrax. And doing the rough math, most of you will kind of figure out that 5,000 people can't really account for 1 million samples. And this is where one of the major distinctions of the LRM program becomes very apparent, and that is the overwhelming emphasis of environmental sample processing to support this response. Because we're not just talking about diagnosing and treating patients. There's arguably a greater effort that is undertaken to identify the point or points of distribution or release and chase that contamination down so it can be wherever it is carried, so it can be contained and eliminated as a public health threat. So again, 1,000 or 1 million samples in a three-month period, as you can imagine, that posed a very daunting task on the laboratories, which are charged not only with processing and analyzing these samples, but also aggregating the massive amounts of data that come from the instrumentation, various instrumentation that produces data in different formats that then need to be aggregated and reconciled at the laboratory to be produced to the CDC and other decision makers in some sort of standard format. And standard format is in itself a relative term. The first event, we saw formats coming from different delivery methods, various formats from the laboratories, which in itself pose another daunting task on CDC personnel who then needed to reconcile that data on a national scale. One of the things that LRN immediately responded with is an initiative to provide a better solution of standard data exchange that could also be in a secure fashion. And that's when the Results Messenger project was galvanized. And this did, in fact, provide that solution of standardized data coming to the CDC in a secure fashion. But as we've seen from various training events and exercises, the RM application does not really alleviate the bottleneck of data flow because it poses another burden on laboratorians and their efforts to manually re-enter data into a system that they may not be very familiar with on a day-to-day basis. And also the manual transfer of any type just took its toll and was a burden on the laboratorians that some folks found to be unacceptable because it did pull them away from their critical tasks, and that is performing analysis in the laboratories. So it's important in this process to minimize data entry, manual data transfer, and infuse the LIMS into this process to enable a seamless exchange of data to CDC. At CDC, this data is then turned into reliable information that can inform response decisions at a national scale, such as dedicating emergency response resources, coordinating containment and decontamination operations, and distributing life-saving vaccines and other medical supplies. I probably don't need to underscore that in a situation like this, when we're dealing with the agents that we're dealing with, highly infectious, rapidly onsetting, the time is critical. With the appropriate infrastructure in place, though, we can have response decisions being made within hours of sample collection as opposed to days or possibly longer. So LIMSI's role in this, again, it's a humble one in the grand scheme of things, but it is to enable this data exchange to be seamless by working with the laboratories to build the capabilities in their LIMS. And I have the LIMS here along with Department of Health Laboratories, because we are talking about the health laboratories. And our work starts in the LIMS itself. Because the LRN has a centrally managed set of protocols and algorithms, every laboratory that performs LRN testing does it according to these protocols. And so we can't standardize configurations at that level. So our work starts in the LIMS. And not only the configurations, but also making sure all of the data elements are supported. And then we then move to the secure transport using following FIN guidance, using HL7 message mapping, and LOINC and SNOMED standard code systems. Now, right off the bat, we ran into several challenges as we started talking to laboratories about adopting this project and taking it on. First, not really in any particular order, but the unique data requirements of LRN reporting. Now, LRN does impose some, because of the sensitivity of the work that they're doing, there's levels of checks and balances that the LRN requires that impose other data requirements that a lot of LIMS aren't, a lot of laboratories aren't familiar with dealing with. So not only did this pose a configuration effort, but it also implied development work as well, which is a costly process. Supporting of environmental samples, something we've seen as well, is that some laboratories don't have environmental accessioning built out in their systems, and this functionality is another roadblock to us fully supporting the LRN process. Continuing maintenance to support new technology, new methods, new bioagents. Every laboratory is going to face that, but with the LRN and the emergence of new diseases around every corner, it seems, this is a reality that, again, strikes harder for our program as we look in the future and maintainability of these capabilities. The multiple sets of data exchange standards, we've heard it. LRN is another challenge because we pose a different set of standards for data exchange, particularly the HL7 specs. And that is, again, primarily because of our need to support the environmental samples along with the clinical samples. And so finding that fit for us really led us to a divergence on some of the other more common approaches to data exchange. And last but certainly not least, it's all about the dollar, and particularly in these times, money has been a critical roadblock for us as we work at and cajole labs to try to come to the table. Money is always a glaring issue with competing priorities from several stakeholders at the laboratories. So we've taken five major approaches to achieving our project goals. First and foremost is the LIMSI work group. This is a forum where experts come together from the various labs to share their challenges and work through approaches to tackling those challenges. And for those who don't feel so expert in this field, this is also a great forum to join to glean from the expertise and the experience that these folks have to offer. Now, LIMS standardization is another key approach for us, and this is one that's maybe kind of unique for a lot of folks to hear. But again, because the LRN has such a centralized set of protocols, we can effectively put together a baseline framework of configurations from one system that can then be used in other laboratories using that same platform. And this not only is to save money for startup and implementation, but we also have efforts to further support long-term capabilities and support changes by centrally managing them and pushing them out to laboratories. And so these are capabilities that we're working with vendors to support, and we're enjoying some success with that, and you'll see in some of the next slides. Open source development is another initiative that we've had our eye on for a while, particularly with the Open Ellis project, which is an open source LIMS. We're excited with our partnership with two laboratories who have built out that system to be a very highly functional, highly configurable system that has also had great success already in the data exchange community. And this is definitely due to the hard work of folks like Dar Shirazi, Gunjan Maktila, and Chandra Johnson and her team. We're very excited about our partnership with them to build the standard modules in that system as well that can be perpetuated to other labs. Standards harmonization, we've kind of talked about it, and I won't go into great detail because there's another session, and I'll give you information on that in a minute. But the standards harmonization with the lab messaging community practice, we're very much involved with. Cindy Vinyan really leads that effort for our team and really helps lead the group as well. We, again, understand, recognize that there are a variety of standards being prescribed by various CDC programs, and those CDC programs are coming together to do what they can to harmonize. We face a challenge in that we do have unique use cases that may prevent us from completely conforming to what other programs adopt, particularly in the new landscape of meaningful use. We are finding our place in that effort. We continue to work to see how we can fit and how ways we can accommodate that. And then funding. Just recently, just last year, in fact, we had a pilot effort with some laboratories, and the funding was critical on getting that work started. And with the success of that work, we've seen other funding streams come through. I'm going to talk about all of these approaches in a little bit more detail in the next slide, so we'll elaborate on each then. First, going into LIMS standardization, this is a good example of to kind of pick on. Anybody know, anybody recognize whose house this is? And it is just one house. This is Bill Gates' house, Xanadu 2.0, as he affectionately calls it. And just a couple fun facts about this house. Heated floors and heated driveways throughout the complex. Don't know how many rooms are in it. But there's a giant digital wall art that changes daily. The major entertainment room, 20-foot wide display made up of 24 rear projection monitors. And this is really takes the cake here. Guests wear pins that upon entrance of a room automatically adjust temperature, music, and lighting based on the guest preferences. And there's one other trivia question for you. Anybody, I guess since nobody recognizes you, you probably don't know this, but there's one special room in the house. It's 15 by 15 square with 20-foot ceilings. Somebody really needed a trampoline room, so they have one of those on the complex as well. And so when I first was reading about this, I thought, wow, Bill nailed it. He this is the home of the future. I think I'm going to buy me one of these next year. Thanks for laughing at that. Or maybe, thanks, I'm not sure. But yeah, that was a joke, obviously, and for two reasons. Number one, there is certainly not another house like this. So we can't expect to go on the market and get our real estate agent to find us a house like this. And the second obvious reason is the total assessed value of this home in 2009 was $147 million. Another quick little trivia question, and I'll get off Bill's back here. But one little thing that's also kind of fun is rumor has it is this fun functionality with the guests wearing pins and everything. Rumor has it doesn't work so good, and Bill doesn't like to talk about it anymore. So again, this is a nice poster child for over customization, and we'd all like to be able to have our fun and build a complex like this, but not a lot of us have Bill's money. And that analogy really rings true when we're talking about the public health environment with limited funding, particularly in today's economic climate. We need to do more with less and maybe adopt a different approach, something a little more humble, something that does everything that you would expect a house to do for a single family home, bathroom, kitchen, living room, garage. And you can still put little decorations out front and make it yours, but the inside functionality remains the same. And not only does this lend to cheaper construction and implementation, but it also lends to cost reduction in just ongoing maintenance going into the future. And these are points that we try to really drive home to the laboratories because the over-customization is something we've seen a lot. And we've also talked to a lot of laboratories who are now spending lots of dollars uncustomizing their systems to bring them to a more standard format so that they can, or more standard configuration so that they can not be an island out there taking on all of the changes and work themselves, but coming to a more standardized configuration that they can also collaborate with other laboratories to reuse work among the different systems. So just again, just what we're doing with standard configurations, we're working with the major vendors to contribute a baseline set of configurations. It's the test configurations and HL7 message mapping that once it's stable in one platform and one pilot implementation can then be reused in subsequent implementations as we see LIMS being more prominent in the public health community. So just kind of an illustration, we do have some caveats to this because What we've also learned was we do not contribute all of the requirements necessary to bring a LIMS up to speed to support LRN operations, primarily because there are other requirements that they're imposed on them by CLIA and other organizations. So there are QA layers that also need to be imposed. Our first introduction of requirements was really to mimic the functionality in the results messenger application, which was very much geared to getting the data, collecting the appropriate data, and getting it to CDC. But in the highly regulated industry of public health, a lot of other checks and balances need to be imposed. And these are requirements that we do not yet contribute to. So our piece of the bucket, as we like to call it, is just a subset of those requirements. But what we do provide is the LIMS data and functionality requirements, the LRN test configurations, again, the standard vocabulary, and the HL7 mapping. And there's a couple extra layers that we are seeing being placed on top of these, additional LRN requirements that apply workflow and other QA. And there are ways we think we can also see some work there to standardize that. And we're in talks with the major vendors and other and just the lab project managers to see how we can fulfill that. And additional non-LRN requirements, and just there are some nuances to a way folks like to do their work that can be applied without affecting the basic configuration framework that we provide. And we want to emphasize that we don't really have an objection to laboratories adding some extra bells and whistles. But when you do it in a way that pulls you out of sync with the standard framework, that could be a costly decision that we want to make sure everybody goes into with eyes wide open. Now, this is kind of an older slide. We pulled this one from a previous presentation. And so another thing that we've learned as we've gotten more experience with dealing with labs is this is what we validate. We provide validation for, and again, the other layers are not something we contribute to. But we also found that maybe what we really do provide is maybe even less of the total package than we thought. And so again, we are working on ways to standardize the yellow area with the additional LRN requirements. And we invite the laboratories to come together to harmonize on the non-LRN requirements so we can together provide a framework that could be reusable with very little extra configuration and as close to the plug-and-play concept as we can possibly get. For standards harmonization, again, I've mentioned there's another session that really hits on this, and I'll just call it out right now. It's tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow morning at 10. It's the interoperability harmonization with the laboratory messaging community practice, ELR flip at LRN LIMS I. Cindy Vinyan, our team member, will be moderating this. I think I'm listed as a panelist, but in actuality, the venerable John Lipsky will be representing LIMS I in that session. So a little plug. And I did actually steal this slide from John. Again, really won't go into it in detail. He does a lot more with it, but we just want to recognize for folks who may not be at the session that we know there are various standards out there, and we are working to harmonize where we can. Again, with the caveat, though, that we still can't seem to find our perfect niche in that environment with our heavy requirements on environmental sample processing. So this is a cool one to talk about. We are seeing new funding streams coming out from different places. The LRN program office partnered with APHOL with a cooperative agreement that did fund the pilot efforts from last year that really kicked this off. With the success of those pilot efforts, We've also seen funding streams coming from LRN LIMS I funding for states. We call it the HIDE-NET funds. And then the FEP, the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Cooperative grants, the language in there is becoming stronger and stronger in favor of the LIMS integration initiative. So to date, we have 14 funded labs, three pilot implementations in 2010 and 11 new labs in 2011. So this funding is really getting some traction. We are seeing great results from it, and we're hoping to see continued funding in the future because of our success. So talking a little about success, we just want to give you a few snapshots to really illustrate where we've come. This is a snapshot from about a year ago. So we had 36 labs engaged, and some expressing some level of interest. Only five really developing to our requirements, and none, that really that bottom line is where we are most focused on. None were live as of a year ago. So we were still talking about this, but hadn't really put it to fruition. That didn't happen much later than that. December of last year is when the big hooray moment happened for us, and two laboratories went live with LRN Data Exchange, which was a big moment for us. And the success of those pilot states was instrumental in seeing what we've seen this year. This is a snapshot today. Several more laboratories engaged. Almost the number actual working on our requirements is at least tripled. And just a flash forward to the end of this year, our projections, and some of these are actual contractual obligations. We expect to see 14 laboratories live with LRN Data Exchange by the end of this year. We're extremely busy, and we expect to get a lot more busy in the next year or two or three to come. So some lessons learned as we start to close this out. What we've learned, as we've discussed with many, many states, we've dealt with several and come to quite a consensus that flexible architecture is critical for the success, and particularly the long-term maintenance of these requirements. The monolithic system that takes care of everything is laborious to manage, and to be more agile and adjust to changes, a modularization of this functionality is a favorite approach for us. Message handling, extracting it away from the LIMS. A bit of a point of debate, as laboratories would really like to see standard vocabulary being embedded in the LIMS. We don't know if we could ever get to that point where there's really one standard for every concept and one way of doing things. And until then, we need to face the reality that we have several data exchange partners that we're dealing with. Some of them recognize specific codes or code systems, and some of them prefer others. And until we can harmonize there, it's not feasible, it's not practical for us to attempt that that messaging handling in the LIMS itself. Abstracting it away using a data brokering system is definitely the preferred approach there. I think we beat this one pretty hard, but excessive customization can be difficult to support. I don't know if I need to say more than with the Bill Gates examples. And harmonizing across projects with people, and there's two points to that: utilizing the standards consistently and coming together as a group. And it's really taking a human effort of a pretty large proportion to root through the details, and there are plenty of them, to come to a consensus on these standards, so we can really lower the bar for the labs, reduce the burden on them to support various data exchange standards, and it's something we're very sensitive of. And but the recognition here is that it takes people, and it takes a lot of good people to do this work. And lastly, talking about the LIMS-I work group again, meeting every 4 weeks. Again, these experts come together to share progresses, challenges, approaches, and lessons learned. And I'm going to call out some of these experts because they've been instrumental in getting us where we are. We've enjoyed the success we have because of the dedication, the persistence, the ingenuity, and the patience of folks like Rob Byers, Joanne Barnhart, Willie Andrews, Mary-Kate Yosteliev, Tina Calagero, Vince Regina, and Ivy Thomas. And I'm just really picking on, again, the pilot labs, but there are several other folks, just a multitude of other brilliant professionals out there doing hard work, and it's because of them that we've enjoyed the success. And I certainly can't leave out the efforts of the results viewer team, who've built the capabilities in the receiving system to support this data exchange, and they are also instrumental in the successes we've enjoyed. And just a last plug to become involved with the LRN work group. We do have an LRN help desk number would probably be more appropriate to give you, but also Jennifer McGee is your primary point of contact to get involved with LRN data exchange. You can always contact me or John, but Jennifer is would be a key contact for now. And that closes it out.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Jason, for this excellent presentation. So next time you see Bill Gates' house, I'm going to recognize it then. Okay, now with this, let us open the floor for a discussion. If you have any question, please raise your hand and state your name.
I'm sorry, I have to go, so I want to go first. This question, for Mike. Mike, so in your presentation, you mentioned that the interoperability hub is going to have, support for AnyDirect, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So AnyDirect, have two transport mechanisms, SMTP and in XDR over SOAP. Are you going to support both of them?
And I'll probably defer some of this to Paul, but we're doing the reference implementation of the Direct REST. So, Paul, I don't know if there's anything you can add.
Familiar with the direct rest implementation?
Yeah, we have an anti-draft rest
company that we
love.
Okay. So I just want to because this the safety testing actually is not just heat. But I think all over the country is about anti-direct implementation. SMTP is required.
Sure.
Over XDI and options.
You're right.
And also the other question on the same time is that are you going to plan to implement anti-direct?
Yeah, so what we did on our, our first pass through this is we just took the reference implementation and went with that. So, Gautam can maybe speak more to the long-term plans of what we're going to do with it. But right now our implementation of it was, very simple just to get it up and running and prove that, the hub could be integrated with a variety of different transports. So.
It's basically what Paul's talking about. The reason is that we are working with HealthBridge, the Health Information Exchange, and we're going to tailor it a little bit to what makes sense for HealthBridge, so we haven't gotten to that part of the project at this stage.
Let me give the mic so that everyone hears the next question.
Next, I promise the last question. So, my doesn't cue me later.
We like the questions. Go ahead.
What's your plan to handle, the provider directory and certificate authority for any indirect implementation?
So, Paul, do you want to answer part of that?
Yeah, I think at this point, we probably haven't had the experience with trying to stand up, you know, physician directory. We do have a custom directory routing solution that we could tailor that, but we haven't gotten that use case yet, gotten to that use case with our examples. So.
Sound like we need further discussion over a beer at our favorite hangout tonight, right?
Okay, thank
Lynn,
you.
Lynn, you're always a lot of trouble. I know that.
Any other question? Okay.
Up front.
For the last speaker, I'm not sure if I heard you right, but you may have said there were some challenges with the meaningful use implementation. So I just wanted you to elaborate on that, if I heard you correctly. You may have said challenges or difficulty with meaningful use.
Can you share the name?
Jackie Higgins with CMS.
So, yeah, and really we're in the early phases of exploration and analysis of the meaningful use, but one seemingly stark issue that we need to deal with is that from our understanding, environmental sampling and environmental the data that comes with environmental sampling is not supported in the meaningful use specs. So we're working on ways to do that. We're talking about, you know, obviously, we're talking about accepting the meaningful use standards for clinical samples, but we still have to find a way to support environmental samples. And in doing so, we then are ourselves working on two different standards, and so there's some questions about, you know, what the value is in that if we're still requiring laboratories to support the standards we've already established.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, if not, then let us give the presenters one more round of applause. Thank you very much.